Kate's voice echoed through his head. He'd been two blocks away when she'd screamed his name. If he'd been any later...
I should have been the one to question her,
said August.
Henry brought a hand to his shoulder.
You're not objective.
He shrugged off the touch.
Sorrow nearly killed her.
If you didn't know Kate, would you have spared her?
August stiffened.
That isn't fair.
Fair? Chided the voice in his head.
A sinner is a sinner.
But it wasn't that simple, not when it came to Kate. She was his past, a reminder of who he'd been, who he'd wanted to be. Of school uniforms and fevers, of starving and stardust and...
Well then, let's begin.
He dragged his spiraling mind to a stop as the mic flared to life and Sorrow's voice filtered through.
What is your name?
Kate tipped her head a fraction. To everyone else, it might have registered as boredom, but August knew she was turning her good ear away from the Sunai.
Catherine Olivia Harker, she answered.
If she was afraid, she was doing a good job of keeping it off her face. She tapped the cuffs with a nail.
Are these pure metal or alloy?
How old are you?
Do you really need to establish a baseline when you know I can't lie?
Answer the question.
18. I was born at 3 a.m. on a Wednesday in Jan-
Are you the daughter of Callum Harker?
Yes.
Are you afraid? Asked Sorrow.
Should I be?
You are a sinner, said Sorrow.
If that's a question, said Kate, then you need to work on your inflection.
August shook his head. Some things really hadn't changed. But Kate only straightened in her seat.
You're new. What's your name?
Sorrow?
That's what August called you, right?
Not very uplifting, is it?
Are these too many questions? I know you have to tell the truth.
As do you, countered Sorrow.
Why did you leave Verity 6 months ago?
Kate paused a moment before answering, a display of will.
Call me crazy? She said slowly. But I just didn't feel very welcome anymore. Not after my father tried to kill me.
And why did you return?
That question struck a chord.
I tried to tell you, said Kate. I'm hunting a monster.
At August's side, Henry tensed.
On the screen, Sorrow inclined their head.
What kind of monster?
Kate shifted in her seat.
I don't know.
What does it feed on?
Violence? Chaos? Death?
I'm not sure.
It doesn't kill with its own hands. As far as I can tell, it convinces its victims to do the job. It turns people against each other.
August started. Squad 6. He looked at Henry, but Henry had already taken up his comm, issuing a low and steady stream of orders.
On the screen, Sorrow continued their interrogation. Describe this monster.
I can't, she snapped, shaking her head. It's a shadow, an outline of something you can't see. It doesn't feel real. It's a nothing, an absence.
You are not making sense, said Sorrow.
You'd understand if you saw it.
And you have?
Yes.
And you know it's here.
I tracked it from Prosperity.
Sorrow's eyes narrowed.
There are no monsters in Prosperity.
There are now.
How does it hunt?
I'm not sure, said Kate. But it seems drawn to violence. It amplifies it.
Sorrow crossed their arms.
How did you track it?
Kate's poise faltered.
What?
You said this monster doesn't have a real body, so how did you track it?
August watched Kate take a breath, buying seconds to bend the truth, before she answered.
It left a trail.
On the feed, Sorrow sounded skeptical.
And you followed it all the way back to Verity.
How valiant.
Kate's expression darkened.
I guess I have a vested interest. Or maybe I was homesick. Or maybe I could tell from a territory away that things were going to absolute shit. Her temper was rising. This thing, whatever it is, I've seen what it can do. It gets into people's heads and it brings out something dark, something violent. It turns them into the monster, and then it spreads, like a virus. She rose to her feet, leaning forward across the table. So yes, I came back to help you kill it. But by all means, leave me chained up here instead. She sat back down. Happy hunting. Kate's chest was rising and falling as if the words had left her winded. Sorrow's poise didn't waver. They said nothing, and August knew they were waiting to see if their influence would draw out anything else. At August's back, people were talking, comms were buzzing, the rise and fall of voices and feeds. But his attention was leveled on the screen, on Kate's face, which was the only reason he saw it. She tipped her head back, and the blonde hair tumbled out of her eyes, and for an instant, they met the camera, and there was a single flare, like light reflected back, a streak obscuring her face. The lens couldn't seem to focus. It blurred, steadied, blurred again, the way it did with monsters. It could have been a glitch, he told himself. An instant later, her head was back down, the flare gone. It could have been a glitch. But Ilsa had seen it too. Her breath caught, a small but audible sound, and her fingers splayed across the table, her pale gaze darting toward him. Henry's back was still turned, and they stared at each other in silence, each wondering what the other would do. It gets into people's heads, Kate had said. I've seen what it can do. August wasn't sure what he'd just seen, or what it meant. But he knew it was only a matter of time before someone else noticed it too. And when they did, you owe her nothing, chided Leo. She is a sinner, echoed Sorrow. What will you do, brother? Said Ilsa with a look. Henry, he said, turning his back to the screen. The head of the FTF was talking rapidly into a comm. He raised a hand and August held his breath, forcing himself to wait patiently, as if nothing was wrong. At last, Henry lowered the comm. What is it? This is wrong. Something's wrong. Everything's wrong. Kate isn't our enemy, he said, but you're treating her like one. If you leave her in there with Sorrow, she'll tell us the truth, but nothing more. She'll give you only what she has to, and it probably won't be enough. What do you suggest? Let me talk to her. No cuffs, no cameras. Henry was already shaking his head. August, she saved my life. And you spared hers. I'm sorry to tell you that good deeds don't prevent bad ones, and until we know exactly if Kate Harker poses a threat to any of our soldiers, to any of our missions, I will reap her soul myself. August was surprised to hear himself say it. Apparently so was Henry. His eyes widened, but he didn't look comforted by the truth in the words. Please, added August. I'm the only one here she'll trust. Henry looked at the screen where Kate had her fists clenched on the table and her head up in a posture of defiance. August could feel himself striking the same pose. But it was Ilsa who decided it. She rose up onto her toes and wrapped her arms around August's chest, resting her chin on his shoulder. He couldn't see the look she gave Henry, the silent message that passed between them. But a moment later, Henry told Sorrow to terminate the interview. Chapter 13. The girl staggered down the hallway, barefoot and bleeding. Her wrists were bound in front of her, and she fought with the rope as she stumbled toward the elevator. Sloane let her get there before he caught up. Fear, delicious, defiant fear, dusted the air like sugar as he pinned her to the wall beside the stainless steel doors and wrenched her head back. Catherine, he whispered, teeth skimming the pulse at her throat, and... The elevator doors chimed and slid open. Sloane hesitated, fangs poised against the girl's skin, The tower's penthouse was invitation only. It belonged to Sloane and Sloane alone. The engineers chained to the table and the hateful little thing perched on his kitchen counter were there because he allowed it. No one came here without being summoned. Which was why he bristled at the sight of the Maokai hurrying forward into his home. His red eyes were wide with panic, blood speckled his face, and gore leaked down one arm. At the sight of Sloane and the human girl trembling against the wall, the Maokai lurched to a stop, but didn't retreat.
"This had better be important," snarled Sloane. "Apologies, sir, but it is. Speak."
The Maokai hesitated, and in Sloane's moment of distraction, the girl almost slipped free. Almost.
"Hold on,"
he muttered, pulling her back and sinking his fangs into her throat. Blood spilled over his tongue, and he could feel the other Maokai's nerves, feel his hunger, too. And just for that, he took his time, drinking every drop. When he was done, Sloane let the body slide to the floor and drew a fresh black square from his pocket. He wiped his mouth and started into the main room, hooking one finger for the Maokai to follow.
"You've intruded on my hospitality and interrupted my meal. This better be worth it."
The engineer's eyes were trained on their work as if they hadn't heard the girl's screams, but the color was high in the woman's face, while the man had gone pale. Alice, meanwhile, was sitting on the counter, skimming a chemistry book.
"Forgive me," said the Maokai. "I thought you would want to know."
He glanced at Alice.
"In private."
Alice waved her fingers.
"Oh, don't worry," she said cheerfully. "Sloane and I are family."
Sloane's teeth clicked together.
"Yes, go on."
The Maokai bowed his head.
"More fangs are dead."
Sloane shot Alice a look.
"This is the third time in 2 nights."
Alice shrugged.
"Wasn't me."
"I was there," said the Maokai. "There was a monster. Wasn't Korsai. Wasn't one of us either."
Sloane frowned.
"A Sunai. On our side of the city."
Alice glanced up. Curiosity peaked. But the Maokai was already shaking his head.
"No. Something else."
"Something else?" echoed Sloane.
"And how did it kill them?"
The Maokai's eyes burned with a frantic light.
"That's the thing. It didn't kill them. The fangs took one look at it and just started killing each other."
Alice snorted.
"Sounds like humans being humans."
Sloane held up a hand.
"And what did you do?" "I tried to stop the fangs and one actually went for me."
He sounded indignant.
"I killed that one, but the rest killed each other, I swear."
"And the something else?"
"It just watched."
Sloane unfastened his cuffs and began to roll up his sleeves.
"Where did this happen?"
"That old warehouse on 10th.
"And who else was there?"
"Only me,"
said the Maokai, gesturing to his stained self. Sloane nodded thoughtfully.
"I appreciate your discretion. Thank you for coming to me."
The Maokai's eyes brightened.
"You're welcome,
He never finished. Sloane tore out his heart. He had to reach through the Maokai's stomach to get it, up around the bone plating on his chest, and by the time he pulled the offending organ free, his arm was slick with gore. Sloane grimaced at the rot of death, the black blood dripping to the floor. Alice rolled her eyes.
"And you say I'm the messy one?"
Sloane unbuttoned the soiled shirt as a sound came from the table. The female engineer had her hands over her mouth.
"Something to say?"
asked Sloane lightly.
"Have you found an answer to my problem yet?"
The woman shook her head. The man's voice was barely a whisper.
"Not yet."
Sloane sighed, turning to Alice.
"Keep an eye on these two,"
he said, shrugging out of the ruined shirt. He dropped it onto the body. And clean this up. The Maokai's corpse was already beginning to dissolve on the floor. Alice wrinkled her nose. Where are you going? Sloane stepped over the mess and went to change his clothes.
You heard our dear departed friend, he said. We seem to have a pest problem.
Chapter 14. The hood went on again, and for several long minutes Kate's world was plunged back into black. The door was opened, her cuffs freed from the table, and then she was hoisted up from her chair and onto unsteady feet. She was shaking. She hated that she was shaking. This was why she'd started smoking. A single strong hand, Sorrow's, she could tell by the vice-like grip, led her from the room and down a hall. She could feel the knife holstered at Sorrow's side.
You know, said Kate, I think we got off on the wrong foot.
The Sunai scoffed.
You don't know me, pressed Kate.
I know who you are, said Sorrow. And I know what you are, and that is enough.
You monsters, muttered Kate. You think everything is black and white.
Her shoes skimmed a gap, the narrow line between floor and elevator.
Maybe it is, for you. But for the rest of us?
The hood came off, and Kate blinked. Sorrow loomed before her, long as a shadow, their silver hair like metal in the artificial light. The Sunai was blocking Kate's view of the control panel.
Where are we going?
Sorrow's gaze was cold, their voice even.
Up.
Her heart fluttered. She'd gotten through the interrogation, white-knuckled it, and for the most part managed to keep a grip on the words coming out of her mouth. She'd told the truth, if not all of it. Maybe she was being released.
Maybe.
But the absence of the hood worried her. Wherever she was being taken next, it didn't matter if she could see. And with every passing second, her nerves tightened. The desire to do something wearing away at the knowledge of its uselessness.
Don't, 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 became the echo in her head.
Sorrow broke the silence.
Humans have free will, they said, picking up the thread of the earlier argument. You chose to err. You chose to sin.
If only you knew, thought Kate, fighting her own muscles, her own mind.
People make mistakes, said Kate. Not everyone deserves to die.
A ghost of amusement crossed the Sunai's lips.
You died the day you took another life. I am simply here to clear your corpse.
A cold chill ran through her at Sorrow's words, at their hand drifting toward the flute knife, at the echo of pain in her wrist. But the elevator stopped and Sorrow didn't draw the weapon. The doors slid open and Kate braced herself for whatever was beyond, for prison cells or a firing squad or a plank at the edge of a roof. But there was only August. No troops, no cells, nothing but August Flynn looking so staggeringly normal, hands in his pockets, the tallies peeking out from his sleeves, that for a second, Kate felt her composure slip. The exhaustion and the fear laid bare. The swell of relief. But something was off. He didn't look at Kate, only at Sorrow.
I'll take it from here.
Kate tried to step toward him, but Sorrow caught her arm.
Explain to me, August, why she is...
No,
he cut in, an edge in his voice. It was the same edge Kate had heard in her father's tone a dozen times, one she herself had mimicked. An edge meant to silence, to quell. It sounded wrong coming from him.
We both have orders. Follow yours and let me follow mine.
A shadow crossed Sorrow's face, but the Sunai complied and Kate was shoved forward into the apartment. August caught her elbow, steadying her as the elevator door slid closed.
I don't think that one likes me, she muttered.
August said nothing, releasing the handcuffs with brisk, sure movements. The metal clicked free and fell away, and she rubbed her wrists, wincing slightly.
Where are we?
The Flynn apartment.
Kate's eyes widened. She'd known South City didn't enjoy the same kind of luxury as the North, hadn't expected Henry Flynn's place to look like Callum Harker's. But she was still struck by the difference, the utter normalcy of it. The penthouse at Harker Hall was a thing of steel and wood and glass, all edges. But this place looked, well, it looked like a home, something lived in. August led her down an entry hall and into the main room, a kitchen opening onto a sitting area, a blanket thrown over the couch. Down a short hall, she saw an open door, a violin case leaning against the edge of a bed. "What are we doing here?"
"I pleaded your case," said August. "Convinced Henry to release you into my custody, at least for the night. So try not to do anything rash."
"But it suits me so well." She was trying to diffuse the tension, but August didn't smile. Everything about him was stiff, as if they'd never met. "What's with the act?" The slightest furrow formed between his eyes.
"What act?"
"The steely, dark-eyed soldier act." She crossed her arms. "Don't get me wrong, it's a nice look. I just don't know why you're still wearing it." August straightened.
"I'm the captain of the task force."
"Okay, so that explains the clothing. What about the rest?"
"What do you mean?"
"You know what I mean. What did he once said about going dark? That every time he did, he lost a piece of what made him human?" Kate refused to believe he'd lost this much. "What happened to you?"
"Things change," he said. "I've changed with them. And so have you."
He took a sudden step toward her, and the hairs on her arms stood on end. His gray eyes tracked across her face, his intensity uncomfortable.
"Why did you come back?"
"Gee, thanks. I missed you too."
"Stop deflecting."
"I already told Sorrow."
"I watched the feed,"
he cut in.
"I heard your answers, but I also saw..."
He hesitated, as if looking for the words. Kate's chest tightened. The camera. There had been a moment, a fraction of a breath, when she'd forgotten about the camera and looked up, desperate to escape Sorrow's gaze. She thought she'd caught herself in time.
"What happened to you in Prosperity, Kate?"
She fought to keep the words down. "Look, it's been a hell of a day, and..."
"This is important."
"Just give me a minute."
"So you can think of another way to bend the truth? To tell me something that's not entirely a lie?" "No. What happened to you?"
Kate fought for air, for thought, the words rising in her throat. August caught her by the shoulders.
"Answer me."
The order was like a blow against a breaking dam. The last of her resolve faltered, failed. She tried to clench her teeth, but it was no use. The truth came pouring out. She heard the words leave her lips, felt them slide across her tongue, traitorous and smooth. A confession.
"It was like falling," she began.
She told him about the shadow in the dark, the monster she'd faced and fought, the one she was still fighting. The truth of how she'd tracked the thing here to Verity. And then it was out, filling the air between them like smoke. Kate drew in a shaky breath as his hands fell away, shock scrawled across his face.
"I'm sorry,"
he said.
"I shouldn't have..."
Her fist cracked against his jaw. It was like hitting a brick wall, but she had the satisfaction of watching his head snap sideways before the pain tore up her hand. She recoiled, clutching her fist as August touched his face, obviously more surprised than hurt.
"No," she snarled. "You shouldn't have."
But the blow had done something, dislodged some small fragment of the August she knew. He looked wounded. Kate took a step back, and then another, and another, until her shoulders met the wall. Blood wept between her knuckles, and the silence between them was so thick that she could hear it. August probably could too. He went to the sink, picking up a towel and filling it with ice before holding it out, like an offering. Kate took it and held the cloth to her throbbing hand.
When did it happen?
He asked. She had to think. The hours had run together. 2 nights ago. I was hunting something else when I saw it. There was a stabbing in a restaurant, and it was standing in the middle of it all, just watching, growing more solid with every scream. I chased it down an alley, and then she trailed off, recalling a cold, dark, chilling fear before she saw its eyes, saw herself, and fell in. I got away, for the most part. Kate swept the hair out of her eyes to show him the streak of silver cutting through her left iris. I said it left a trail. August tensed, his face unreadable.
How did you get away?
Kate shrugged. I don't know. Maybe I'm just resilient when it comes to having monsters in my head. I guess you were good practice. She didn't tell him the silver was spreading. Didn't want to think about what would happen if it took over the remaining blue before she killed the source. It's not just for looks, she said. This shard, it's some kind of link. I can use it to see this. She didn't know what to call it. A shadow? A void? Liam's voice echoed through her head.
Call it what it is. Call it what it does.
Chaos Eater, she said.
How does it work?
Asked August. Kate chewed her lip, trying to find the words. Have you ever stood between two mirrors? They reflect, back and forth, until you see yourself 100 times. When I look at myself, at this, she touched her cheek. It's like the opposite of that. Instead of multiplying, I disappear into the gap. Does that make sense?
No,
said August.
But you saw the monster here.
She nodded. It's not always easy or clear, understatement. But it's something. August hesitated.
You compared it to a virus.
Kate knew what he was trying to ask, even without the words. I'm not contagious.
How do you know?
Kate thought of the older woman in the rest stop, tipping up her chin. Consider the theory tested. August paled. Relax, she said. No one got hurt. She let her gaze escape to the window. The walls in her father's penthouse were made entirely of glass, the city laid out on display. The walls here were solid, studded with small windows, but even still, she could tell which wall faced north. The seam was traced with light, a thin band cutting through the city, and somewhere beyond it, Callum Harker's tower was shrouded in darkness. Is it true? She asked after a moment. About Sloane? His name tasted vile in her mouth. August's eyes widened.
How did you hear?
When sorrow caught me, I was running from a group of humans in North City. They all had these metal collars around their necks.
Fangs,
he said. When they cornered me, one of them said Sloane's name. He said, she's just his type. Kate wrapped her arms around herself. What the hell did that mean? And how is Sloane even alive?
We're not sure. Things were messy after Callum's death. Everyone knew it was Harker the monsters followed. Harker, they obeyed, but without him, no one knew what they might do. If they'd rise up or scatter.
August ran a hand through his hair, a shadow of fatigue crossing his face.
A few citizens tried to step up, impose curfews, maintain some sense of order. It looked like it might work. And then Sloane came back.
A shiver ran through her.
By the time we knew what was happening,
August trailed off, dark lashes shadowing his eyes.
3 solid nights and 3 days. That's all it took.
She wasn't surprised. Sloane had always wanted to be king. If I'd known, she said, I would have come back sooner. August's head swung up.
But I'm glad you didn't know.
That happy to see me? He fumbled. She could tell he wanted to lie and couldn't.
Look around, Kate. Only a cruel person would be glad to see you here.
You invited me to stay once. Things have changed.
So you've said.
She shook her head, exasperated, exhausted.
Anything else I should know?
Something flickered in his face, too fast to read.
What is it?
He hesitated. The pause was too long. The answer, when it came, too rushed.
Ilsa survived.
Kate brightened. That's wonderful, she said.
But there was something else, something he wasn't telling her.
She has no voice,
he added darkly. But she's alive.
August's head bobbed once, and Kate wondered why he had veered toward this particular truth and what he'd swerved away from. What was he hiding?
You must be tired,
he said, the formality back in his voice. And Kate was, too tired to pry, to fight, to grab him by the shoulders and shake him until the real August, the one she remembered, came free. So she nodded and let him lead her down the hall to the room with the open door. Unlike her bedroom at Harker Hall, the sterile surfaces she tried to make hers, this place was August to a T. From the precarious stacks of philosophy and astronomy books, to the music player discarded among the tangled sheets, and the violin case propped against the footboard. Standing in this place, the August in front of her made even less sense. Kate had spent enough time hiding behind her own walls to know a barricade when she saw one. His sleeves were rolled up, and she gestured to the mark circling his forearm. How many days? He looked down, hesitating, as if he wasn't sure. That uncertainty, at least, seemed to bother him. Instead of answering, he reached for the instrument case and turned to leave.
You can have the bed.
Where will you sleep?
There's a couch in the living room.
So why don't I sleep there? It was a challenge. She knew the answer. She just wanted to see if he would say it. Her eyes went to the doorknob under his hand, the locking mechanism on the other side. August didn't take the bait.
Get some rest, Kate.
She still had a dozen questions. About the FTF, about him, about her own uncertain future. But fatigue was wrapping itself around her, dragging her down. She sank onto the bed. It was softer than she'd expected and smelled of cool linen. August started to close the door. 184, she said. He paused.
What?
That's how many days since I left Verity. The same number since you fell. In case you couldn't remember. August didn't say anything, only pulled the door shut behind him. And Kate was left wondering if she was wrong, if August had gone dark since she left. It would explain the coldness. But the August she'd known had fought so hard to hold on. Kate heard the lock click and rolled her eyes but didn't get up. If she'd traded one cell for another, at least this one had a bed. There were no mirrors, and for that small mercy she was thankful. Her bag was sitting at the foot of the bed, and Kate rummaged through it, turning out its contents on the bed. She knew what she would find. Her weapons were gone, confiscated. So was her tablet. Frustration prickled through her. But it wasn't like she would get a signal. And even if she could write to the wardens, to Riley, what would she say? Alive for now. Hope you are too. Kate fell back on the bed and tried to find calm, surrounded by the familiar scent of August and the unfamiliar room, by the strange bed and the light beneath the door and the thoughts spinning through her head. Where are you? She asked herself, and the answer came rushing up. She was on Riley's couch, splitting a pizza, while the TV droned on and she told him about the shadow in her head, about Rick and the green, about the fangs and sorrow, the race through the red, and the concrete room. And Riley listened and nodded. But before he could answer, he dissolved, giving way to August, his cold gaze and his voice echoing through her head.
You should never have come back.
And Kate lay there in the dark, wondering, for the first time, if maybe he was right.
Chapter 15. August stared down at the tallies on his skin.
184.
All this time, Kate had been counting. When had he stopped?
Things change.
He returned to the kitchen, trying to clear his head.
I've changed with them.
He tapped his comm.
Command, this is Alpha.
Three short beats of silence.
Alpha.
Philip's voice was uncertain.
Logs show you're off tonight. Since when do monsters take nights off?
Said August.
Find me a job. I can't do that. What do you mean? You've been grounded.
Henry. The tension in his chest grew.
Let me speak to him. He's overseeing a convoy from the southern waste. Patch me through.
There was a short sequence of beeps and then Henry's voice.
August? Since when am I grounded? You already have a task. When I get back, you can tell me what you learned. In the meantime, Kate Harker is in your custody. Kate is asleep,
countered August, temper rising.
And when is the last time you slept?
August took a deep breath.
I'm not. Consider it an order. Henry!
But he could tell by the static, the man was gone. August slammed his fist on the counter, igniting a brief spark of pain. There and then gone. He slid his hands through his hair. Maybe Henry was right. He was tired, in a bone-deep way. He shoved off the counter and crossed into the living room, leaving the lights off as he sank onto the couch. If he listened, he could hear Kate moving beyond the bedroom door, rolling over on his bed. 6 months, and she was still made of restless limbs and shallow breaths.
Why did you come back?
He tried to focus instead on the patter of Allegro's step somewhere in Ilse's room, the distant sound of movement from the floors below. He closed his eyes and felt his body sinking deeper into the cushions, but the quieter the room became, the louder Kate's voice in his head. What happened to you? The look on her face when he forced the truth from her, that horrible mixture of betrayal and disgust.
That isn't me, he wanted to say. Yes, it is,
insisted Leo. What happened to you? Demanded Kate.
You were weak, said his brother.
What happened to you?
Now you are strong.
What happened to you? He forced himself up, slinging the violin case over his shoulder. He didn't need a mission. There was plenty of trouble waiting in the dark. The doors to the private elevator stood open, and he stepped in, punching the button for the lobby. The door slid shut, and he was met with a rippling reflection, distorted steel twisting his features, erasing everything but the broadest planes of his face. He waited for the feeling of slow descent, but the elevator didn't move. He punched the lobby again. Still nothing. He hit the button to make the doors open. They didn't. August sighed and looked up, straight into the surveillance lens mounted in the corner, even though he knew looking straight at it would blur the feed.
Ilse, he said evenly, let me go.
The elevator didn't move.
I have a job to do.
Nothing. He'd never thought of himself as claustrophobic, but the elevator walls were starting to feel close.
Please, he said tightly, let me go. I won't stay out long, but I need...
He faltered. What was the truth? What did he need? To move? To think? To hunt? To rape? To kill? How was he supposed to find the words to tell his sister that he couldn't stand to sit still, to be alone with the voices in his head, with himself?
I need this,
he said at last, voice tight with frustration. Nothing.
Ilse...
After a few long seconds, the elevator started down. Chapter 16. The first time Sloane heard that humans feared the dark, he laughed.
What passed for dark was, to him, simply layers of shadow, 100 varying degrees of gray. Dim, perhaps, but Sloane's eyes were sharp. He could see by the light of the streetlight 4 blocks over, by the glow of the moon behind clouds. As for the things that lurked in that dark, that lived and hunted and fed in that dark, well, that was another matter. As he reached the warehouse on 10th, he could smell the traces of blood, but the space itself was empty, at least of corpses, which was fine. Sloane wasn't there to speak to the dead. He stepped into the hollow drum of a building, the floor littered with bullet casings and shreds of cloth. Light poured in from a streetlight outside, casting a triangle of safety near the open doors, and there, where it gave way to shadow, were the fangs' steel collars, stacked like bones after a meal. Sloane stared into the shadows.
"Did you see it?"
The shadows rippled, shifted, and after a moment they stared back, white eyes flickering against the dark.
We saw.
The words echoed around him, taken up by countless mouths. The Corsi were bottom feeders, half-formed things with no vision, no ambition, only the simple desire to eat. But they could be useful when they chose.
"What did you see?"
The darkness shifted, snickered.
"Beat, break, ruin, flesh, bone, beat, break."
Sloane tried again.
"What did the creature look like?"
The Corsi chittered, uncertain, their voices dissipating. But then, as if reaching a consensus, they began to draw themselves together. 100 shadowy forms became one, their eyes crowding into 2 circles, and their claws gathering into hands, and their teeth tracing an outline of something vaguely human. A grotesque mockery of a monster.
"Can you bring it to me?"
The Corsi shook its collective head.
No, not real."
"What do you mean, it's not real?"
The Corsi shivered and fell apart, 1 form scattering back into many. They went silent then, and Sloane began to wonder if the conversation was over. The Corsi were fickle things, distracted by a scent, a passing whim. But after a few moments, they came shuddering back to life, drawing themselves once more into a single form.
"Like that," they hissed over and over. "Like that, like that, like that."
Sloane let out a low, exasperated sigh.
"What does it eat?" he demanded.
But the Corsi had lost interest.
"Beat, break, ruin, flesh, bone, beat, break."
Their voices rose louder and louder until the walls of the warehouse shook. Sloane turned to go, their violent chorus following him out. Verse 3. A Monster at Heart. Chapter 1. She is standing in her father's office, alone, the gun in her hand, when cold air kisses her neck and a voice whispers,
"Catherine."
Red eyes reflected in the window. She turns, lifts the gun, but she is not fast enough. The monster in the black suit forces her back against the glass. The gun is gone, her hands are empty. She tears at him, but her fingers go right through as the window cracks, splinters, breaks, and she begins to fall. Kate jolted forward, fingers knotted in her shirt. Her heart was pounding, but she couldn't remember why. The nightmare was already gone, leaving only a sick feeling and a racing pulse in its wake. The room was empty, the world beyond August's window still dark, save for the muted glow of the light strip at the compound's base and the first touches of dawn. She got up, padding barefoot to the door, turning the handle before she remembered it was locked.
Kate sighed and dug around in her bag until she found a couple of hairpins. She knelt before the lock, then paused, running her fingers over the plate that held the doorknob to the door. She fetched her silver lighter instead, thumbing the hidden catch. The switchblade snicked out, and she fit the narrow tip into the first screw and began to turn. When she was done, the door whispered open. A faint noise issued from the room to her right. August's violin case was propped against the wall, and when she pressed her ear to the wood, she heard the steady hum of a shower. The smell of coffee wafted from the kitchen. The lights were on, but the room was empty. And she poured herself a cup, stifling a yawn. Sleep had come quick, but it had been thin, restless, and the dream. Her gaze drifted absently across the kitchen and landed on a knife block. 5 wooden handles jutted from the block while a 6th knife lay on the counter, blade shining. There was something lovely about knives, the gleam of light on polished metal, the satin smoothness of the handle, the razor-sharp edge. Her fingers drifted toward it, a strange ache in her palm at the thought of... Something brushed against Kate's leg and she recoiled, jarred from the pull of the shadow in her head. It had stolen over her so smoothly, and she swore at herself as a dark shape vanished around the corner of the island. She frowned and peered over, but the other side was empty. And then, out of nowhere, a small black-and-white thing leaped onto the counter. The Flynns had a cat. It stared at Kate, and she stared back. She had never owned a pet. The closest she'd come was walking the school mascot at her 3rd prep school. But she'd always liked animals more than people. And again, that might have been a reflection on people more than on her. She wiggled her fingers, watching the cat paw absently at her hand. "Who are you?" she whispered.
"Allegro."
Kate spun, a kitchen knife in her hand before she even thought to reach for it. A man was standing in the doorway, tall and slim, his graying hair cut short. She recognized him at once as the founder of the FTF, the man who had held half the city against Callum Harker and his monsters, her father's greatest rival. And he was wearing a bathrobe.
"Miss Harker," said Henry Flynn in a steady voice, "I didn't mean to startle you, but you are standing in my kitchen. And that is my favorite knife."
Sorry, she said, lowering the weapon. Old habit. He flashed a wan smile and drew his hand from the pocket of his robe, revealing a small gun.
New habit.
He held the gun by the barrel with only 2 fingers, as if he hated touching it, then put it back in his pocket. Kate slotted the knife into the block, trying to ignore the way her fingers resisted letting go. She took a step back from the counter to be safe as Henry rounded the island and poured himself a mug of coffee.
"Did you sleep?"
He didn't ask if she'd slept well.
"Yes."
She gave him a once-over, saw the slight stoop as if it hurt to straighten, the shadows under his eyes and cheekbones. Flynn laughed at the scrutiny, a soft, empty sound.
"No rest for the wicked."
He looked around the apartment.
"Are you enjoying our small piece of home? It's no penthouse."
His gaze returned to her.
"But it's no prison either."
His voice was pleasant enough, but his message was clear. Her presence here was predicated on her cooperation.
"Since we're both awake,"
he went on,
"perhaps we could talk about this new monster. This
Chaos Eater," she offered. "What about it?"
2 days ago, one of my squads turned their weapons on one another without cause or warning, for no apparent reason."
The air caught in Kate's throat. It wasn't shock or horror, but a strange and unsettling relief. She'd seen the creature, of course, but it was one thing to have visions and another to have facts. She wasn't losing her mind, at least not entirely.
"At the time, we couldn't explain it, but it sounds as if it fits your monster's pattern."
Flynn drew a small tablet from the other pocket of his robe and began typing. Kate's eyes widened. You have a connection? She asked. Again, the grim smile.
Internal only. The inter-territory towers were among the first things to fail. We don't know if the damage was a casualty in the midst of another attack, or...
I'm willing to bet it was intentional, said Kate, taking up her coffee. It's a siege break tactic.
Flynn's brows rose. Excuse me?
She took a long sip. Well, which is scarier, she said. Being locked in a house, or being locked in a house with no way of calling for help, no way of telling someone you're in trouble. It fosters fear, discord, all the things a growing monster needs. Flynn stared at her.
That's quite a mercenary observation.
What can I say? She said. I am my father's daughter.
I hope not.
Silence formed, sudden and uncomfortable. Flynn nodded at her wrist, still bruised from Sorrow's grip, the knuckles split from hitting August.
Let me see.
It's fine. He waited patiently until she finally held out her hand. He prodded the skin and flexed her wrist, and then her fingers, forward and back with a doctor's care. It hurt, but nothing was broken. Flynn rummaged beneath the counter and came up with a med kit, and she watched in silence as he wrapped and taped her hand.
The question now, he said while he worked, is how to hunt this monster. Perhaps you have some insight.
Kate hesitated, wondering if this was simply another kind of interrogation, but the words didn't feel leading or weighted. She drew back her hand, searching for something to say.
Have you noticed anything? Prompted Flynn.
Kate considered this. She'd seen it, or rather seen through its eyes, during the day, but the vision had been fractured, insubstantial. I believe it hunts at night.
That makes sense,
said Flynn thoughtfully. It does?
Night has a way of blurring lines in the psyche. It makes us feel free. Studies show people are generally less inhibited after dark, more open to influence, and...
He stifled a cough, then continued.
Primal behaviors. If this creature is preying on dark thoughts, turning them into actions, then yes, night would be its optimal time to hunt.
And there's also a camouflage aspect, added Kate. This thing is like a walking black hole, easier to blend into the dark. Flynn nodded. Kate's stomach growled, loud enough for both to hear.
You must be hungry,
he said. And she was, ravenously. But her father's words rose unbidden.
Every weakness is a place to slide a knife.
She hadn't answered, but Henry was already at the fridge.
Omelette?
You cook?
Two of the five people who live here do enjoy food.
She perched on a stool, watching as he set a carton of eggs and a few vegetables on the counter. Where does it come from? The food?
The task force stores what it can, said Flynn. We raid depots on both sides of the city. As for fresh food, we hold a grid of farms on the south side of the waste. But resources aren't endless, and scavengers are plenty.
Just one more reason this conflict couldn't last, thought Kate. Flynn started dicing vegetables with quick, deft motions. He had been a surgeon, she remembered, not simply a doctor. It was clear from the way he held the knife. Its edge winked at her, and she turned her attention to the cat instead, now asleep in a fruit bowl. Her fingers crept cautiously toward its tail.
He belongs to August, said Flynn, though Ilsa is quite fond of him.
And Sorrow? Flynn's brow furrowed.
Sorrow spends most of their time in the barracks.
He paused over his work.
The Zunai are not like other monsters. They are like us. Every one of them is as unique as a human.
And yet, August never struck me as a cat person. Flynn chuckled softly.
Perhaps not, he said, cracking eggs into a bowl. But my son has always been the kind of person willing to rescue something lost.
Vegetables sizzled in the pan, their scent twisting her stomach. You really think of him that way? As your son?
I do.
A shadow crossed Kate's mind. the memory of her own father in his office, and the words he used like weapons.
I never wanted a daughter.
Flynn split the omelet onto two plates and slid hers forward. Kate dug in, ravenous. But Flynn didn't seem interested in his own portion.
August believes you want to help.
I wouldn't have come back if I didn't.
If that's true, then you'll tell me what you know.
I already have, she said between bites.
About Sloan,
he finished. She stilled. What?
If anyone can pick apart that monster's logic, figure out what he wants.
Kate set down her fork as revulsion rose in her throat. She didn't want to get inside Sloane's head, didn't want to resurrect the specter of her father. But Henry Flynn was right. If anyone could predict that monster's motions, it would be her. She swallowed hard. If I had to guess, she said, picking up her fork again. He wants what all monsters want.
And what's that?
More, said Kate. More violence, more death. She pictured the crimson light of the Maokai's eyes dancing with pleasure, with menace. Sloane is like the cat that plays with the mouse before eating it, just because it can. Only this time, the mouse is Verity. She could feel Flynn's gaze on her, but she focused on the fork in his hand, the way he nudged the omelet on his plate. Kate had grown up reading people. The smallest tells in her father's mouth, her mother's eyes. She thought of the photos she'd seen of Henry Flynn. The last 6 months had clearly taken a toll. There was a gauntness to his face, a gray undertone to his pallor. And then there was the shallow way he breathed, as if trying to stave off a coughing fit. How long have you been sick? She asked. Flynn stilled. He could lie to her, if he wanted to. They both knew that. But in the end, he didn't.
It's hard to know. Our medical facilities have never been as strong as those north of the seam. Have you told? Some things don't need to be said to be known.
His voice stayed steady, calm.
It won't change anything. I used to think that if we took back the city in time, perhaps. But life doesn't always honor plans.
His attention drifted to the windows where dawn was starting to sweep across the city.
A man is not a cause, and a cause is not a man. Control is already being shifted to the council. With any luck, I'll make...
He stopped as footsteps sounded in the hall. A moment later, Emily Flynn strode into the kitchen dressed in full fatigues. She was as tall as her husband, with short black hair and smooth dark skin, and if she thought it odd that Kate Harker was having breakfast at their kitchen counter, she didn't say so.
Something smells wonderful.
Emily, said Henry,
a new sweetness infusing his voice.
I've got 3 hours before my next shift. Are those eggs for me?
Flynn held out his fork and Emily swept it from his fingers. He wrapped an arm loosely around her as she ate, and Kate's chest tightened. There was such a simple ease to the gesture, a comfort to the way they moved in and out of each other's space. Even when her parents had been together, it had never been like this.
Don't let me interrupt, said Emily.
You're not, said Flynn, kissing her shoulder. Catherine and I...
Kate,
she corrected curtly. Kate and I were just finishing up.
Emily gave a brisk nod. Her gaze leveled straight at Kate, clearly the kind of woman used to making eye contact. She was glad she'd opted for the bangs.
August has work to do, so you'll be confined to the apartment.
Kate's muscles twitched.
Is that necessary?
Not at all, she said cheerfully.
If you'd prefer a cell downstairs.
Em, said Flynn. Kate is proving a very cooperative guest.
Ilsa can monitor remotely, and I've already arranged for a soldier to be on comms in case.
But Kate wasn't listening. She couldn't stay here, couldn't lose another day. Not with the Chaos Eater out there, stealing more of her mind with every cycle of the sun.
I want to train with the FTF.
The lie came out so easily.